This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
Humans do not enter a world which is inherently structured. We must give the world a structure which we ourselves create. Dr. James T. Webb. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently released startling new statistics on the rise of deaths by suicide in the United States, which are up 25% since 1999 across most ethnic and age groups. These numbers clearly point to a crisis, but of what kind? Many argue that this is a crisis of mental health care, that people are not getting the services they need. The proposed solution is better therapies, more effective antidepressants, and greater access to treatment. This assessment may be correct. However, the suicide rate has increased even as more people are seeking treatment for depression and anxiety, and even as treatment for those conditions has become more widely available. An additional explanation seems to be needed. As a behavioral scientist who studies basic psychological needs, including the need for meaning, I am convinced that our nation's suicide crisis is in part a crisis of meaninglessness. Clay Rutledge. Valeria interviews Dr. Sheena Sachdev. She is a licensed psychologist who specializes in existential psychology. She treats individuals struggling with anxiety, depression, relational issues, and trauma. Her phenomenological approach ensures that each individual has a spotlight on their subjective human experience and perspective. Dr. Sachdev is an advocate of group therapy and has initiated several groups at each site she has worked with, including a yoga meditation group, a mindfulness group, creativity groups, and existential depression and anxiety groups. Meet Dr. Sheena at drsheena.com. Here is the interview with Dr. Sheena Sachdev.
In your own words, who is Dr. Sheena Sachdev?
Thank you for that question. Well, I am a clinical psychologist, but I will say that I'm someone who's always been interested in philosophy, in spirituality, in trying to understand this crazy thing called life. Mm. I like to understand connection, how we're connected to one another, how we're connected to nature and the world, and how we create our own little worlds, and how we can protect our peace and learn to understand and love ourselves and love everything around us.
Wow. Yes. Gosh, I could say yes forever to that. yes. So why psychology instead of philosophy itself, or becoming a philosopher or even a spiritual teacher?
It's a good question. There's many reasons. I would say a more logistical reason is being from an Indian culture. There is a lot of pressure to become a professional. So it's very common to have choices such as engineer, doctor, lawyer, and the doctor part always interested me. So I thought to myself, what could I do where I could be a doctor, but also strive after my own personal interests? And I think now I feel that it chose me.
Yes.
So yeah. I wouldn't have known there was so much out there for me. There was so much connection. There was so much in this field that is fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to think that it chose me.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, that's what I thought actually by reading your biography and your website and the topic of our conversation today, which has to do with existential depression and anxiety. So that really came to mind. A question that comes to mind in the moment is, why does it take so long for some of us to find this way of living that resonates with our inner truth? I know you call, you actually mentioned authenticity. That's a word that it's used very much these days. Mm-hmm. So, and also, do you feel that what you're doing today is very much aligned with your inner truth, with your inner self? Although in a way, that's the only thing that exists really, right? The inner self that's guiding everything else. But yeah, that's the question. Why does it take so long for some of us to get to the point where you are today, which very much feels that way?
That's a really good question. I think there's a lot of pressure to meet societal standards.
Right.
And so we often end up following paths that are not our own, sometimes to please others, mm-hmm. sometimes to check off boxes, because we don't know that we're allowed to seek our own truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think often people mm-hmm. will get to a place mm-hmm. where there will be some mental anguish, or there will be a pivotal moment in your life where you might even lose yourself. And it beckons you to question what you truly want. And it changes constantly, right? Like sometimes you think, oh, I want to do this, and this is fulfilling, but now maybe I want to do this. So I myself am at that point. I love what I do. But I want to be able to help more people. And so I'm going to explore that. Because that's authentic to me, regardless of where it goes.
Beautiful.
And it's courageous to be authentic. It's scary to be authentic because not everyone is going to be validating that for you.
Right. So true. Yes, I love that. You know, this idea that we can do whatever we do is an extension of what we already feel that resonates with us, that's our truth, as you said. Yes, I love that. Just recently, I've been reflecting upon this too, because I do this work and I have written 3 books and the podcast, and I have this is almost like a marketing agency for spiritual and meaningful messages, healing messages. So now I was thinking, what else? So it seems like naturally we tend to want to expand ourselves, which is really the truth within ourselves. And for some reason, which is very interesting to notice, it's connected to helping others. It's always searching to, what's the word? It is connection, but it's something, it's almost like a reflection of what we have found to be true without some people without finding words for or language for, which to me is that everything's interconnected. There's this feeling, it might be a feeling that everything is a reflection of my inner self. And that has something to do, the deeper we go, or the deeper I have been, I have been and I'm still working on, I see this this idea, this concept of love being integrated, being expressed or searching for expression. And I think that's what I feel when you say, you know, finding more things, something else to do that can express that inner truth. I think that's how it resonates to me. It's basically it's natural for that mm-hmm. to happen. And you want to make a comment? I have too many questions here for you, Sheena, after this.
Oh, but, no. Yeah. I love what you're saying. I do think it just comes down to love of self.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think it's something yeah. we're born with. I don't know if you have children or you've just been around children. You know, they're just themselves.
Mm, yes, yes.
And so, you know, we hear a lot about inner child work, but essentially who you start out with, that is a being that loves themselves and is curious about the world, right? Mm. And wants to expand and grow.
Yes.
And I don't think that part of us should ever stop.
Ah, yes. That's the part of us that often gets suppressed, right? Repressed, suppressed.
Right.
Yes. Wow, that's a good time to, I guess, within the topic of the expansion of truth, of your own truth, talk to me about your new, let's say, creative work, which is writing a book. I read that in your bio. Do you already have the topic? Have you started writing that book?
I'm writing a book on existential depression. And one of the reasons I'm writing it is because I want people to have access to being able to help themselves, because not everyone has access to mental health and it's not affordable for everyone. And the second reason I'm writing it is because I want people to be able to see their depression with a new perspective, with a beneficial perspective that will allow them to utilize it instead of, you know, just kind of leave them down and feeling bad about themselves, so that it can guide them to be able to seek the truth and journey and the things that they're missing in their life that would make them feel more balanced and just happy.
Yes. Ah, that just resonates so much with me. I have had the experience of depression. I don't think so. I guess the question is, because I'm thinking here of the, you know, in the past, how the way I felt and the circumstances around me and everything. But I don't know if that was an existential depression. So what is the difference between the depression or the different kinds of depression, and specifically existential depression?
Mm-hmm. So one could argue that depression is always existential. What often makes it specifically existential would be that you might be having intrusive thoughts about your place in life, how the world is working, and a key component would be a desire for some meaning, because you're feeling that there's no purpose or meaning in your life. So that's what you are seeking.
Yeah. Ah, wow. So, I can relate to that though, that experience in the past. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And even when I have, but that changed. It's interesting how it seems like depression or existential depression, it's interesting idea the way you put it. Of course, I read about it too. Now I have a better idea of what that is. But so it's always related to meaning, which means, Sheena, in a way that it's always evolving too, right? This the concept of meaning, of purpose. So it's not a place, a destination to arrive at and stay at and stagnated. It's always evolving, per se, flowing, moving. That's what it feels like feelings or thoughts. They're always changing. They are never the same, although they can be repetitious. That's exactly what I do when I have those feelings of, my life is not really going in the direction that I wanted to go, you know, in certain areas. So what I learned to do is to have courage and do something about it and kind of look closer into it and then find another way of seeing it or find a solution for that if it is perceived as a problem, which has, you know, has been the case. In my case, it's always sadness sets in. Like, when I heard about the on the news about, I don't watch TV, but when my husband talked to me about this war between Russia and Ukraine, mm-hmm. I remember feeling, with my entire body, feeling so sad. It's almost like an instant depression, a feeling of depression. And I was wondering why that happened. I guess was this the belief that I had that, you know, we had evolved enough as human beings, that we are technologically so advanced. And, you know, I see so much creativity and intelligence and coming from human beings from all areas. So that seemed to be very primitive in a way, you know, to fight one another and to kill one another. It didn't make sense for the times that we are living. So would you say that depression, anxiety, and all kinds of mental, perhaps not all kinds of mental disorders, but specifically depression, does it relate to belief systems as well? Have you found that to be true?
Almost definitely.
Yeah,
there's very core beliefs that we hold that can be challenged in therapy. You're bringing up a really good point. There is a lot of war around us at the moment, and it's difficult to move and just be present in our own lives when we know that there's so much chaos going on.
Yeah.
So that's just a difficult situation because, you know, you, Valeria, or me, Sheena, there's only so much we can do.
Yeah.
Right. And to accept that, to understand that this is a collective issue, it's not something I can completely take on myself.
Right.
And me feeling bad about it is not going to help the situation. Mm. In fact, it's going to be detrimental to me. So the more positive I am, the more I can influence that which surrounds me, and which again is collective.
Yes, yeah, that's a beautiful, wise answer. Yes, and I have, of course, got to that conclusion, but not through therapy, because it's wonderful to have therapists and people like you, which I considered like being a best friend, talking to people like you. But my inclination is always spiritual. I always go into spiritual philosophies or knowledge, and interesting in love enough. It's from my latest, has been 10, 15 years now. It's Advaita Vedanta, which is Hindu philosophy. Mm. It's non-duality. So that has really informed me a lot in my day-to-day living. So I'm always reflecting, contemplating the idea that this is just one reality. Oh, it's just part of one huge whole. You know, I can say huge, but who knows? It feels that way, very limitless, infinite whole. Mm-hmm. So that, it has been my practice, in a sense of directing the mind, always those kinds of ideas, concepts that more and more feel less abstract and it has been integrated in a way. I feel like the mind, it's easily accepting that this is a dreamlike reality. You know, I mean, I'm using language here that I always say that on the podcast, that some might believe it's, you know, out there. But it really feels that way. It's always half true what we see and perceive. So I always keep that in mind, always. Like, wait a minute, let me just have fun with this instead of getting serious around anything that happens here. It has made a huge difference, but that is a spiritual perspective. I'm wondering if this is a good time to ask you about the approach that you use to help those with existential depression and anxiety. Are there any methods similar to non-duality, Advaita Vedanta?
Yeah, there is. It's interesting because, first of all, just I want to go back to what you were saying. I don't think there's any power greater than being connected to yourself.
Mm, yes.
And I do think there's something spiritual about psychotherapy. I mean, it does derive itself not only from, you know, philosophy, but also shamanism.
Yes.
And, you know, you would go back to clergy back in the day, right, when you needed to seek counsel. It's funny because when people think of existential psychotherapy, they think of, you know, existential philosophers such as Kierkegaard or Nietzsche. So we often think, okay, well, they talked about the idea that there is no God. And that's a possibility. You know, the reality is we have no idea. We have no idea. We create and have faith in whatever we want to believe. Mm. So how do we deal with that anxiety day to day? And it culminates in so many different ways. This fear of death, it can be a fear of failure, you know, a fear of not showing up as who you are, not getting that job, not getting married at the time that you wanted to, your day just not going well.
Right.
And so specifically with anxiety, but even with depression, what my main goal is when I see someone is to get them to go back to trusting themselves, to go back to their intuition. Because if you are dealing with doubt, which is a poison, if you can't make decisions, if you are fearful, then you're not connected to yourself. So how do we get you out of your mind, which can sometimes work against us, and get you deeper and more connected to that psyche, the soul?
Wow. Yes, I love that. That's very spiritual to me. It really sounds like spiritual practices. Yeah, yes, you're right. Yeah. Psychology, that's, to me, that's spiritual work. It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The more I talk to psychologists here, the more I see that. Yes. Oh, I love what you said. That I mean, I don't love the of course, that state of being, that's not a fun one, fearful, doubtful. Yes, but I resonate with what you said. So that's when we are not connected to ourselves, then those feelings arise. Yes, so, so true. I was just reflecting here, you know, situations in my life, just recently being doubt, you know, some situations here. Huh? So true. So talk to me about experience versus faith, belief, and trust. Is there, do you see, let's say, do you see, what's the specific question that I want to ask? Like, why can we embrace experience as truth? And then in that case, we don't need to, there's no need for faith or trust or belief systems, because in a way we're now so connected to the present moment and what's happening here that the question would be, what is real to me, or what is my own experience of reality? Mm. So that question I keep asking myself, because it's because I don't want to, I have done that enough times that caused so much unnecessary suffering. I was taking on pieces of reality from others. And, you know, even things that I watched on TV or somebody said to me, and kind of integrating that within my own reality, but it couldn't really, because it was not my own perception of the world, of myself and the world. So it wouldn't fit, and which just caused so much confusion. So I have learned to always ask that question, what is my experience of this, which we call life? And then that has changed everything too. That's another Vedanta practice. Yeah. So talk to me for a moment about that. I would love to hear from you. Experience versus faith, trust, belief systems.
Yeah. I'm taking that in, what you just said. That's what I love about existential therapy, is that it is a phenomenological approach, which is just a fancy word for understanding someone's subjective experience.
Right.
So what is it like for Valeria to question herself in that moment? What does that look like? What does that feel like? And sometimes words, I think, don't convey our experiences that well.
True.
So if you told me, for instance, you were scared and I said, I want to know more. And you said, well, I felt like I was falling in a well. Okay. now I have a better understanding. It's a sense of helplessness you might have been feeling in that moment. So for me personally, in the work that I do, I want to get into the details, and I want to truly understand what is it like to be you in that moment. Mm. And when you're talking about realities, I mean, that's fascinating. Because we're all living in different realities.
Yes.
And you're talking about being influenced by other people's realities. And I'll just give you a very simple example. Yes. If you've ever been very angry and maybe you want to say something to someone, or you're just upset and frustrated, maybe you want to break a plate. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then you take a couple of moments. You take some time to yourself and you go back to the situation. It's a different reality.
Mm, yes. Right.
You know, so it can be hard, incredibly hard, just on a very real level to balance emotions, your own thoughts, other people's thoughts.
Right.
And I think it's something you have to cultivate. I think you have to go through a lot of difficulties in life. And when you get to a place where you are connected to yourself, you have to be fiercely protective of your positivity and your reality.
Mm. Yes. Yes. I have found that to be very much true. Yes. And the question that arises when I do this type of meditation, I call it contemplation, reflection, is if everything is interconnected, if that's true, that there are no entities here really doing anything. It's just consciousness, God, kind of expressing itself in all different ways. So what would I call my own? What would be my own thoughts, my own energies, my own perception of reality? I'm wondering what's the reference? Would that be the body and the conditioned mind, Sheena?
Are you talking about your singular experience?
Yes, yeah. It's coming from, psyche. Some people call it the soul too. So it's basically body-mind, right? Because the other piece is connected to everything. So it's not the spiritual piece. It's not really, let's say, separate from the body-mind either. So nothing's separate. But there's something that comes when you talk, when I read about existential psychology, and of course a lot of philosophy in my past, there's a sense that we are living here separate lives, that it's not universal. And the more I investigate, you know, within myself, this idea, it doesn't seem to, it just doesn't find, let's say, there's no foundation for it. It's always very, not just abstract, but it feels unreal to me. So it's in the sense that whatever's happening here is universal. There's nothing personal. Mm. Absolutely nothing personal.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Right. So in that case, there's not really one entity's kind of, because we just talked a lot, and I do have a lot of conversations about our own truth and finding. But anyway, it's universal again, isn't it? It's connecting. Once we connect with ourselves at a deeper level, then we find universal truth. You know, that it has been my case. It goes back to interconnectedness, love, kindness, peace. And it's never something else. And I see that with spiritual teachers. I see with spiritual seekers that have found that to be true. They always find something that's universal. So it's almost like the deeper you go as a person, or believing that you are a person looking for something personal to go deeper into it, you find universal, let's say, flow, universal energies, universal truths. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that resonates with you, but it has been my experience.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that this is all connected. Mm. But I think, you know, when you're laying your head on your pillow at night, there's that, I think they call it in psychoanalysis, the I.
Yeah.
You talk to yourself. Yeah. That's kind of an interesting concept, right? Because if there's only one person, who are you talking to?
Right. Yes. Yes.
So there is that sense of, I think, you know, as humans, we deal with that type of loneliness, no matter how connected we all are. We're always talking to ourselves. We're always managing ourselves and processing what happened and trying to be okay with ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
Like what we've done is enough. We've accomplished a lot. Mm. And I think maybe that's where gratitude comes in, is just being happy with yourself.
Yes, right. With the expression of the apparent separated expression of the whole, right, of God. Yeah, that's how I put it. And I mean, that's my spiritual, let's say, knowledge, kind of speaking now. It's interesting to use different language. It's not easy. It doesn't resonate anymore, because I find, you're right, we have this feeling that, I think it's because of the body, though, that we are a separate entity. It's because the body is separate. But even if you really investigate deeper, you see that's not, the body is not separate from anything else. It's part of nature. It is nature itself. So it's connected to everything else. So there's no really anything, there's nothing separate from that wholeness, which I call universal intelligence. Everything just, it's one. And then by going deeper, like within doing therapy or having deeper conversations, then we, or spiritual work, we get to see that clearly. And and that's what's fascinating. So I love what you do for that reason too, because, I mean, to me, that's the goal. Would you say that that's the goal of what you do as a clinical psychologist specializing in existential depression and anxiety?
Most definitely. I think you can relate when you get to talk to people, when you get to have conversations, and it's just very honorable to be a part of people's journeys and really help guide them towards what they truly want. And just being able to see that we're all the same in so many ways. Yes. We're all human. Yes. We all get nervous and scared. And it's incredibly admirable how people overcome obstacles in their lives, no matter what they've dealt with. And we're just such resilient beings.
That's beautiful. Yes, that's true. And you see, again, that to me, it goes back to that investigation, that going deeper, not stopping anywhere, always investigating deeper into this, you know, the nature of your own reality, of your own perceptions, of yourself, as not the one entity, but the self per se, the self with capital S. So yes, and in the end, Sheena, that's what we are all seeking to experience, isn't it? Which is universal again, happiness, peace, to have a sense of purpose. That, again, that connectedness to everything else, to nature and others, which we're already connected, but for some reason, there's something about the mind that as a tool, it's wonderful, but not as a guide for truth. I don't think so. Yeah, it's just not a good tool for truth. I want to mention that you also host, I want to mention your services. I have them here. And I know you have some interesting group work. Where did I put? Yeah, here. So individual therapy, telehealth, online services, couples therapy, and group therapy, which interestingly, you talk about meditation and mindfulness. Let me go back. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yoga meditation group, mindfulness group, creativity groups, and existential depression and anxiety groups. Do you host these meetings online or in person only, Sheena?
At the moment, I'm doing it online, but in the future, I would love to host them in person, just because there's a great desire for that, especially post-COVID. And there's nothing, I think, more healing than getting people together and letting them heal themselves, you know? I think it's actually more powerful than individual therapy. And I think it's very needed right now in this day and age.
Yes. Oh, I love that too. That's interesting that you say that. It has been a calling for me for the last 3 years to host events like this, speaking. Mm-hmm. So we come together and talk about these topics. So yes, there's something about the presence of the body mind, right there, especially, I mean, the body within the mind. Or because a lot of times I'm talking to you now and I don't feel the presence of the body, but the mind, which is the inner self speaking, the psychological part of us. But then there's something that happens when the body's present as well. You're right, something mm-hmm. happens. It's the connection is definitely deeper. And sometimes in a sense of, in the healing sense of releasing also energies, right? Or being becoming more aware of triggers. Oh, I'm still holding on to that trauma from childhood. Wow. So that would be amazing. I mean, to me, that's incredible to be able to be open to this level where you can become aware of those subtle movements, you know, within mm-hmm. the energy in the body. That's incredible. So I do want to make a comment about this, Gina. Mm-hmm. I have other questions here, but would you like to make a comment about this, the body's presence?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think group work is just so fascinating. It's just a completely different experience, but noticing your body, other people noticing your body, you being affected mm-hmm. by other people, you know, and being able to express that in a group where you would normally never say these things.
Right.
It just kind of deepens that connection to others and yourself.
Yes, I love that. I have to say that again. Yes, it's fun to me, but in a very mm-hmm. meaningful way, in empowering way. This question. I have way too many questions, and I do have the guided questions from you, so I want to make sure I get them too. Before that, there's a question that came to me. Yes, about prevention. What's the best way to prevent existential depression?
I don't know if you can. Don't live your life.
Hey, Brian, don't be here. Yes, that's not a good idea. Yeah, we're trying to prevent that.
Right. No, but I hear you. I think to be able to just recognize.
There's no way to prevent that, you know.
There's no way to prevent what we experience. You know, I think it's a part, again, of just being a human. You're going to experience loss in your life. You're going to experience high moments. You're going to experience fear. But what do you do with that? And if you've been through it enough, how do you know what to do and how to manage your thoughts? And again, just be able to connect to yourself so that you have that higher self always guiding you. Mm-hmm. For example, you've been through this before. Let yourself be sad for a little bit. That's okay. And then you're going to feel better because things come and go. It's constant change. It's constant transition.
Wow. Beautifully said. I love that, that wisdom. Yes. It's almost like the idea which I talked to here on the podcast a long time ago about finding a cure for life. It seems like most of us are trying to find, solve a problem as if life is a problem. And it's not, I looked when I was, because I come from lots of trauma, lots of trouble as a child. So I was abused in many different ways. So it was really difficult to find gratitude for this. So I always was looking for, you know, deeper meaning because I couldn't find a sense of gratitude for being here. So I was always, you know, asking the questions, why, how can I, you know, I had to find the answers for why this happened. So I think one of the universal questions that you are familiar with, I'm sure, is injustice. That's one that really always gets me every time, you know, seeing animals being abused. It really touches me deeply. Children. So, that has been my quest, in a way, to find an answer for that. And I don't know if we can, right, Sheena? Maybe it goes back to the same question.
Yeah, I think you're right. I really like how you were talking about this desire for a solution, because that is something that I see a lot in people who just are suffering from existential concerns is, you know, what is the solution to this? And also, there's always a, understandably, there's a fixation on fairness.
Yes.
Right. When we know that the world's not fair, we know that so much of it is luck, where we're born, what family we're born into. I wish I could make sense of that or understand that more. But I think we're all capable of this, but there are people such as you and I and so many other people out there where we've been drawn to become more spiritual because we're seekers and we're curious and we want to know why. And I think that's what can be skewed with in a negative way when we can wind up with depression or anxiety, when the truth is we're just seeking truth, right?
Yes.
And maybe there's a truth, maybe there's not a truth, but you have your own special truth that you have to seek out in your own way.
Right. In order to make sense, of the
yes.
Of this experience right here in the moment.
Right.
Yeah. So true. Yeah, I've been, because that had been my biggest concern, or let's say, concerned because of the unnecessary suffering that I've seen within my own existence and then other people around me and then the world at large. So the question has been always, how can we end suffering? I mean, it has been the question of ages, right? That's the question that everybody, thousands of years, been asking and trying to solve that problem. Unnecessary suffering, how can we end that? Mm-hmm. And that is truth again, isn't it, Sheena? Once we find the truth that in this reality, which we call life, anything can happen, then it's that gives us a foundation, some sort of foundation that's not really a destination, a place, it's a placeless place, but has some, it has some ground to it. It's interesting because I feel guided, not just guided, but almost like uplifted, held when I contemplate that truth, that everything is part of the whole, that, you know, this idea of God that we have is not really, can be comprehended with the rational mind, because it's something that's so much bigger in a sense that it's everything. So everything you look at, it's God. Everything that's happening now, the sounds, everything, it's just God expressing itself in different ways. I mean, that's really my guiding principle that guides me. Like, oh, wait a minute, let me just relax here and have fun, because everything is universal. Everything is God. There's no separation. So I guess it's a shift in the way we perceive life. It's a change. It's a shift in perception, for sure, which doesn't change anything. Reality is still the same, but in the same way, everything changes. So it doesn't change, but it changes. It's paradoxical in that way. Let's see. Oh, gosh, we're almost at the end. Let me...
Make a comment?
Oh, yes, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Just because I really like what you're saying. I think to me, and I'm not necessarily a religious person, but I think the closer you are to yourself, that's God. You know? And I just want to point out that what you're doing, Valeria, and what I'm doing, this is a way that we are trying to minimize suffering and promote and expand love and correct the things that we've gone through because we don't want other people to go through it. Or we just at least want them to have some support while they're going through
it. Yes, that's it. Yes. Another billion times to that. Yes. The other day I was... I asked my husband to do something, and I think I was in a hurry, was rushing to do something. Then I asked him in a way that I thought wasn't kind. And then he went there and he went to do it immediately. And then in the computer, something, just write a message, do something. And then he looked down and he was, and I caught myself and I went back and I just looked at him like doing what I asked him to do. Mm-hmm. And then I start crying because I'm like, my God, you know, you have everything I have. We share the same fundamental reality. So, because sometimes I feel like he suffers unnecessarily in so many ways. And I'm always trying to kind of point to that, you know, that he can find that connection that you speak of with himself, the deeper connection and experience this wholeness that everything is. And that made me cry, made me emotional. I remember, like, oh my God, because you are what you're looking for. You know, you're already it. There's nothing, I cannot help you with it, you know, adding anything. and yeah, that was interesting. It was a very interesting experience that it was just recent, about probably 2 weeks ago. And that got me really, I didn't talk to him about it or anything, but I talked to somebody else here in you now. So I think it feels like a reflection. The more I see the wholeness here within myself, which I call not myself, but the self, then the more I see it everywhere. And then it sadness kind of sets in, and hopefully not depression. Right. When I see that, you know, other entities that seem to be separate, they have not realized that they are what they're looking for. It's right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say that.
I really love the way you described that. I mean, it just shows how much depth there is to you and the beauty you felt in that moment.
Yes.
With the duality of sadness. I mean, that's such a great expression of what it is to notice, you know, the moments in this very chaotic life.
Yes, right. Yeah, be present to this. Yeah, right. Oh, it's amazing. You cannot even... It's hard to put into words, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what he said. The beauty. Yeah, there's beauty in it. I mean, mm-hmm. I cannot even picture that beauty. It's how beautiful it is. I cannot, the eyes cannot even see it. It transcends, you know, the senses. It's just, yes. let's see. Gosh, you got me going, Sheena, with this. I could talk forever about these topics. I love what's not to love about it anyway.
Right.
So I want to mention that while I was researching about because I never heard the term existential depression. So I was researching and I found a website that I will mention here. It's called highability.org. And there was an article, the title of the article was, is the increased rate of suicide death based on a crisis of existential despair? So that was the question and title. Mm. And then I came across this author called Dr. James T. Webb, his name. He wrote a book titled Searching for Meaning, Idealism, Bright Minds, Disillusionment and Hope. So that's the title of the book that he wrote. And then he said many things, but this phrase caught my attention. He said, humans do not enter a world which is inherently structured. We must give the world a structure which we ourselves create. So that really resonated with me. And perhaps not the word create, but more like perception, not the way we perceive it, not really created. But that it's really true, resonated true to me. And then the question that I had for you was about something that he talks in his book on and on and on. It's about bright minds, like people who are highly sensitive and gifted people. They do tend to suffer from existential depression more. Mm-hmm. And the article talked about Robin Williams, that he was one very good example of that. Yeah. So I'd love to hear some comments from you on this.
Yes. Robin Williams, I mean, he's one of the celebrity deaths that just really affected me. I think he was like everyone's funny uncle. Sad. I know he suffered from bipolar, but at the end, I think it was maybe Lewy body's disease that caused him to take his own life. Suicide is, I feel like it's a very taboo topic Like we're not allowed to talk about it for some reason, as if none of us have ever contemplated it, even for a second. But, you know, it's one thing to think about it. It's another thing to act on it. And I will say, if it is something that you're suffering with, you should definitely seek some type of mental health, at least talk to a doctor. But again, I don't want to make it into a topic that is contagious. Like we talk about it and all of a sudden you have it. There's this idea that it's just so far and from our experiences. And again, I think it's just really, it's a scary thing. When people struggle with this, they are in the depths of despair and they have been there for a while. So it's such a personal decision. The person is in such extreme pain. So I don't think we should judge it. And I also just want to point out that biologically, it goes against everything that's within us. It's not an easy decision to come to. I have the privilege of dealing with this issue. I have a lot of clients who have tried to harm themselves, who have tried to kill themselves. And it takes time to get out of that perspective. And these are very sensitive people. These are highly sensitive people that feel as though the world is just too cruel of a place to be in. I do think physical pain and whatever, for instance, Robin Williams went through was probably different. I can't imagine dealing with that. But again, if it's something that you're suffering with, I do just want to point out that you're probably a very positive person. You know, you want goodness in the world and you've just received too much. You're too far from that, but it is possible. It's definitely possible to get there.
Yes, especially within our own reality, right, Sheena? Just create that sense of truth. A question that I have for you, I think is an important question to try to answer here. What are the early signs of existential depression and anxiety?
Yeah, so with depression in general, it can kind of creep up on you. And of course, if you've suffered a loss, if there's grief, that's completely natural. Existential concerns, I mean, they happen, I've learned, to children. Children contemplate these things, even if they don't talk about it, because they're trying to understand why grandma's not around anymore or what happened to their dog. It's something people grapple with, I think, as teenagers, you know, when they're individuating and starting to learn about the world and start to fathom if there is a God or if there isn't a God. So these are thoughts that that I think everyone goes through. But when you start to struggle with the desire to live, when you're noticing anhedonia, when you're noticing that the things that you once enjoyed, you no longer enjoy. When you're starting to have intrusive thoughts about your purpose in the world, maybe feeling a sense of panic, internal panic, because you don't know what to do with yourself or it's too large of a concept for you to grapple with. I think that's the point where you try to seek help, where you can get resources online or through books. I would say that's a good indicator.
Yeah, it really resonates true to me. Yeah, it's been my own experience too. And not waiting too long, right, Sheena?
Not good idea.
Some of us
tend to do that.
Yeah, I did. For sure I did. And I had one moment of suicidal thinking, but it was not really ideation. I think there's a difference, right? When there's a plan and all, but that was not really the case. But I remember just really having that, almost like dancing with death. That was an interesting, and I wrote about it, and it's, I try not to discard anything. It's so useful to even go back and just kind of reflect on how the mind can operate and where it can go It's just incredible how much it can do in a good, in a so good way. So understanding the nature of the mind itself is very important too, mm-hmm. if we can get to that point. So before we say goodbye, I know I have an ending question here for you, but before that, would you like to add anything else, Sheena, that you left unsaid? Any questions I didn't ask? Anything else?
Well, I mean, you somehow encompassed all of the things I wanted to talk about. I just want to point out one thing, and that is if you are struggling specifically with depression, aside from having a social support system, which I know is hard in this day and age, really seek out passions and interests because creativity is the solution.
Wow. What a beautiful message. Yes. Yes. Billion times to that flow, right? Of expanding. Not feeling stagnated, because that's not what we are. Not even who, but what. It's always moving. In that sense, when it comes to this reality, yes. Beautiful suggestion. So before we say goodbye, I want to mention your website, drsheena.com. That will be clickable, very easy to find on the podcast notes. And you also can be found on TikTok and YouTube. So that's another, those links will be there too. But before we say goodbye for today, I want to thank you for your presence, your beautiful presence of openness, of timeless wisdom in doing this work you do. I very much appreciate it. Thank you so much for being you.
Thank you, Valeria, and thank you for having me. And I thank you for your energy. It feels really good to talk to this type of energy.
Oh my God, it's fun. I love doing this. I keep saying that because it's true. It's true to this here. So my last question will be, I usually ask a question to everybody, but for you today, I'll ask you a different one. I have ending questions here that I choose from. So a question about freedom. What is freedom to you? What is to be free?
Wow. I love that you asked me that, because in this moment and in this stage in my life, I truly feel free. And I must say, just personally, how wonderful it feels. And I will tell you that freedom for me is because I don't care about what other people think of me. I don't care about the outcome of anything. Mm. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do and wherever that leads me to. And I think there's nothing greater than living a life of being authentic.
Mm. Wow. Yes. That's really wonderful. Yes. So not, and it's not in the sense of not caring. It's just that you're so engaged with that connection within yourself. That's it. What else to wish for? That's it. That it feels like a destination to me, although we don't have one. But yeah, being authentic. I absolutely agree. Thank you so much again, Sheena, for being you, for doing what you do, for your beautiful presence. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll talk soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Dr. Sheena Sachdev and her work, please visit drsheena.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.